Tosos, this sugya is a very, it's actually a very good teaching, Tosos. It's a very good teaching, Tosos, because I think it illuminates the methodology or the conundrum or the issues that Rishonim face in dealing with a particular topic. And what I mean by that, you have four or five or six different Gemaras, and the question is, how do you put the pieces together? The reason I asked Sam for his marker is because I think that one of the things you want to do, certainly by the time the sugya is over, is to have listed all the Gemaras and see how do the different positions in the Rishonim deal with them. And it's sometimes much easier to think about visually. This is the kind of Tosos that I feel that you don't even get a sense of where things are going until you've read it for the second or third time. Then you first have a sense of where it's going, then you can read it again a couple more times, and then I think the positions sort of start to gel. And I think this is a very good example of a Tosos that if you haven't learned the Gemaras before, more importantly than a question of just having learned, but if you don't know the Gemaras like that before, you are going to have a really hard time learning Tosos, which is why, even though I don't do this, and I know you don't do this, but we all should do this, is that whenever you learn any Tosos, before even learning the Tosos, you should, since the Mesoros HaShas was so kind as to put the Mekoros in, as the sources, you should go through every Gemara that Tosos is going to quote, and then read the Tosos. And one of the amazing things that you'll find is that after you've done that, Tosos is so much easier to read. And I don't just mean because you understand the Gemaras that he's quoting, but because you have a much fuller understanding of the Gemara stepping in, you have a sense of the direction in which Tosos is headed. Okay? So that's why I did pull out for you and send to you this morning the relevant Gemaras. I would just tell you that when I put stuff in small print, I don't intend for you to do that. If you have finished all the Makaras and you want to explore that, by all means. I left it only in small print here and didn't ellipsicize it or whatever the word is, because it's such an interesting Gemara. But nonetheless, in terms of your time triage, you should skip over the small print. I hope that was clear in the first place, until you finish the Makaras. So, let us start with the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Tes Amud Beis. And I think that maybe, Andy, would you like to read for us?
Amar of Yosef. Evi Abal, Evin Shizita, Evi Aal, Evin Shizimum, Evi Abal, Karmin, Evin Shaman Zaman.
Okay. This might also merit a chart in its own right if you're not familiar with the Sugya. Basic din here. A man, the Torah says, a man is motzi shemer on his wife. Ki yikach ish isha uva'eleha usne'a. Man takes a wife, comes unto her, and he hates her. V'samla li los tvarim v'hotzi'a la shemra. So he makes accusations. He is motzi shemra on her. That's the origin of the term motzi shemra. It's a very specific meaning. V'yamar es ha'isha hazos lakachti v'ekrav e'leha v'lamatzasi la besulim. Now, he claims she's not a basula. How does he know she's not a basula? Well, presumably he either felt no resistance in terms when he had bia, or there's no blood on the sheet. Right now, what is his accusation exactly? So, really, if you learn the first parak of Ksubas, there really could be two possible accusations. Accusation number one could be that she committed adultery between the time of Erisin and the time now. The other possibility is that she wasn't a basula when I married her. Now, one could debate what Pshuta Shemikra hears here, but Chazal clearly assumed that the accusation is that she committed adultery between the time we had Erisim, between the Orasa and now. And therefore, if I am telling the truth, she is actually deserving of the death penalty. And hence, Zach.
Doesn't the Pasuk say she's deserving of the death penalty?
No, then the next Parsha, I was about to say, the next Parsha says, dealing with what happens if his accusations are true. So Chazal saying is a very... Now, the Torah doesn't say when the adultery took place. It just says that she wasn't the psula. And then it says, if that's the case,
would you really argue that she would be... she's
So I'm going to frame it a little differently from you in terms of... I'm not arguing what Pshuta Shemikra is here, but it seems to me that you might find a scholar who would claim that no, that exactly yes. And it's not the Mekach Tos. If I cheated you in business, that's one thing. That doesn't get that penalty. But the woman who already defamed and shamed her family by having, you know, having had intercourse outside of wedlock and then gone through the ceremony pretending to be a Bsula and now is found out not to be, maybe yes. I mean, if you think about certain tribal, think about certain practices in Arab society now, which we would consider barbaric. Okay, but what I'm telling you is that there are many practices. We were once such a more tribal society. Just read Nevi'im Rishonim, read Sefer Shoftim, read all sorts of stories there, and you realize that we weren't always the most civilized bunch under all circumstances. I'll put it nicely. So the fact remains that it's not inconceivable that you can imagine a society thinking that that might be proper. Okay, but nonetheless, we have a Torah Shabbat, we have a Torah Shabbat Peh that makes it clear that Imemes Hayah Davar Zeh, and you could argue it's pshat. You read the next parshios, and they're all about adultery under various circumstances, right? The next parshios, Ki Matzei Isho Chevim Isha Bu'las Baal, Umesu Gam Shneihem. And you could argue that it's obvious based upon context that means she committed adultery. It's not against Pshut Lashemek to argue it, but you could see how someone just reading in the course of things, right, comes up with this conclusion. Now, but in the interim, assuming that these charges are false, so her parents come to the Ziknei Ha'ir and they say that SBT nasati la'ishazeh vayisna eha v'inehu sama lilos tvarim leimar lo matzasi levitcha besulim ve'ele besulei v'iteyu farsu asim la lefnei Ziknei Ha'ir. And as Rashi says, they are mechavir the davar, they clarify the pshat is they pull out the bedsheet and there's blood on it. It's like, okay, you lie. Okay, then what do they do? They give him Malkos, they afflict him. I don't remember which one has the lamed, which one doesn't. Shalacha kol yamav. Okay, so he has two punishments for defaming her character. Number one, he gets Malkus. Number two, he pays Mea Kesef. Now, Chazal here do not take the Pasuk at face value. Chazal attach a very important stipulation. And that stipulation is what, Alex? Yes. Is there another Alex in the room?
No.
Okay.
I just don't know why you're asking because of our conversation.
Correct.
I'm drawing a blank.
What, in order for a Motzi Shemra to be chayav of the punishment, what must he do? It's not enough that he accused his wife of harlotry. He must hire false witnesses to come and testify against her. Yes,
Can they have to be, just clarifying, do they have to be exomen? They can't be eating.
No, by Edom Uchashim, you don't know who's lying.
So we're saying they have to be exomen.
They have to then be huzam. So we have to know, he brought these witnesses, I think he has to be socher them. This sugya is the beginning of the fourth perek. Not beginning, but right before where we started in Bikias is the issues of Motzi Shemra, and I believe we assume the Baal has to have been socher the Edom. Now, the punishment here is not for the false testimony. The punishment here is for hiring false witnesses. Okay? Alex and John asked me the question, what about Ein Shlech Dvar Aveira? Ein Shlech Dvar Aveira would be relevant if we wanted to give the Baal the punishment that the witnesses get. We're not giving the punishment the witnesses get. Ein Shlech Dvar Aveira means that the Shlech performs an Aveira. We don't say if the punishment for Aveira X is supposed to be Z, we don't say that if you hired, you asked the guy to go and do it, that you get punishment Z. No. It means the shaliach gets punishment Z. But here it's not about questioning Shlech Vera. Here the punishment is not for the false testimony. The Edim get what the Edim get. They get the death penalty. But you get the punishment of Malkos and Mea Kesef for having hired the false witnesses under these circumstances. Normally when you hire false witnesses, there's no specific punishment. I think the Gemara says, is there Gemara in Baba Kama in Perek Hakones, that says that there are four people whose din is spata bedine adam bedino mas but chay bedine shemayim, and one of them is, I think, socher ede sheker. Okay, but here by eight motzi shemra, there's a very specific punishment for hiring false witnesses when they are husam, when they become zomamin, and that is mea kesef and malchus. So now, so yes.
What are they testifying about?
That this woman committed adultery, you know, between the time of Erusin and the time of Chuppah. So, we have the first Edom testify that the woman committed adultery. So, who do they want to cost what? Well, they wanted to cause the woman to forfeit her ksuba, and they also wanted to cause the woman to die. So, that is what we would call mamon unefashos le'echa. At least on the surface, that's what we think. Next, says the so the din is the havia av edim vehizimum le'edei abal. So the din is, go ahead, Andy.
If
you didn't read it already, read it again. Actually, if you read it already, read it again anyway. So why did they're Neragim? Because they tried to get the Na'ara killed, and therefore Vasisen lo kasher zaman lasos le'achiv, and therefore they get killed. They also tried to cost the Na'ara money. That's very nice, but kam le'bid the rabba minei, and therefore we say that they only get dinei nefashos. Now, here's an interesting question, which is really anticipating Rabbeinu Tam Shita. Is that really kam le'bid the rabba minei? Why not? Yes?
They never actually caused her the loss of Tuba.
No, but they would have. And the point is,
So
Rashi addresses that question. If her ksuba was 200 zuz, they didn't cause her the loss of 200 zuz because she might never have collected it. But a ksuba has a future value. Right? A woman can sell her ksuba before she's divorced or widowed, and at that point, it's an actuarial estimate, right? Of how much is a 200 zuz ksuba worth on a 27-year-old woman with a husband who's 31 years old and who has a family history of X, Y, and Z? So the actuaries will say that ksuba of 200 zuz right now, if you want to buy it, based upon future probability of collecting it from the husband on the assumption that he dies or he divorces her, is 60 zuz, is 30 zuz. Right, whatever it is. So that is value right now, and by eliminating the possibility, that's what she had in her hands now, he's mastered that right now. Plus, he's going to get her killed. So he's mastered her mamam. Why is that not lakam lebe the rabba mine? Instinctively, you should have realized it's not. I mean, some Rishonim say it is. The Gemara even suggests this. But why is that not really kam lebe the rabba mine? Ezra Shema?
She doesn't get killed instead of losing the money. She gets both.
Okay. So, why should that matter? The bottom line is, you know, she, firstly, the losing of the money for her is not a punishment.
Sorry, I think I said the opposite of what I would say.
Okay.
She doesn't lose the money as a punishment on her. Ksuba happens to lose the money, but her punishment is death.
Well, so. I would say right now, if I come, and right now she could sell the ksuba. By claiming that that ksuba is to be torn up, I am taking away her money right now. Again, that's still the futures question. So, normally what is kam lebe de rabba minei? Kam lebe de rabba minei is, I perform two averos. Avera 1 has punishment of death. Avera 2 has punishment of pay. Now, it might be that I do these as one act, I might do it as two acts simultaneously, we could discuss that, but it means I am due two punishments, one for this Avera is Misa, one for that Avera is Mama, right? I light a Gaddish on fire on Shabbos, so I'm Chayiv Misa because I was Mechalo Shabbos. I'm chayiv mamon because I was mazik your property. So we say kam lebe de rabba minei. What is the person's punishment here of these eidim? Kasher zamam. What did they want to do? They wanted to do this. Therefore, that's what we do to them. It's not two punishments. It's in effect two parts of this, of one punishment. The punishment is kasher zamam. That is in effect, by the way, what Rabbeinu Tam says. That's more or less where he's coming from. But he doesn't, because one could have realized that at the outset, right, that this is really not a case when, if you were to say, as the Gemara is about to in the next line, that mamon lezeh nefashos lezeh, it's not because you don't say kam lebe de rabba minei, it's because that's what kasher zamam is. I have to say, by the way, that our pashtus Rabbeinu Tam Shita is the correct Shita in all the Gemaras. It's the one that by far works the best. That's an opinion. You can disagree with that. But I think even conceptually, Rabbeinu Tam Shita is almost compelling, that you're not giving the Edom two punishments, you're giving them one punishment. The punishment happens to have two parts. Kasher Zamam. That's the punishment. What did they want to do? That happens to be their action was going to be cost the person money and death. Ezra Shimon, what I would say is, the question is, how does the woman get two punishments? There, the answer to the question is, she gets Misa spaced in, but Nemela, she's forfeited her ksuba because she violated the terms of the ksuba. That's what we're relevant to talk about. But from the Edom's perspective, but for her, it is two punishments. It's just that one comes Nemela. Whereas, in the case of the Eidim Zomim, it's really one punishment, but it happens to have two parts. Danny?
I'm presuming that Kasher Zomim is a category of punishment. So, like, that this is, like, called Kasher Zomim.
Correct. Well, that's, I mean, Rabbeinu Tam formulates it more in accordance with that, but I think the whole point is that whatever the Edom tried to do is their punishment. It's one punishment.
It's more compelling to separate this case from the standard case of Kamayev, if you separate the acts as opposed to separating the punishments.
No, here it's one act.
What's the problem?
Well, that's why it doesn't work so well. That was the kasha. That was the kasha that they asked on that first approach.
Exactly.
Right? Right, so that's what it doesn't...
It's on the second question. Because this is like... This is still
putter,
right? This, like,
I know it's on the second question. I understand that, but the bottom line is, it's still what the Edom did.
We still have to explain why the first case is different than the second case.
That's not hard to explain why, because in the first case, Ezra Shimon, what I said is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, no. What I said is correct, but. In other words, it's correct even more so than I said. In other words, when it comes to the woman, the Edom, basically the woman, the fact that she's forfeited her ksuba is not a punishment to her. That happens mamela, okay?
It doesn't.
You have to say that. You have to say that actually, even for Rabbeinu Tam. Even for Rabbeinu Tam, you have to say that, right?
Can we explain that a little bit more? Why it's not punishment for her?
In other words, it happens memela. I'm really talking about the second case, I think is better.
In the case of Teshlim, it doesn't matter whether it
happened. No, in other words, we would say, you have to say that it's not that it's a punishment, that she just happens to be unable to collect it. In other words, the forfeiture of the ksuba is not a punishment to the woman. It's that if you made a contract and you violated the terms of the contract, you don't get to collect the payment, that's all.
Like it's nezek instead of... They're basically mazik the woman by preventing her.
So you're saying, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you're saying that's the weakness in Rabbeinu Tam's Shita. Oh no, so he answers that question. It is the dachuk part of Rabbeinu Tam's Shita. No, I take that back. It is the dachuk part of me. That's the one part that's difficult. He answers that question.
Yeah,
he says, because you have...
When I was hearing your presentation, I thought you were talking about the first part, so I really didn't understand it.
Right now, I'm thinking actually, but I wasn't being careful. That's my fault. Rabbeinu Tam addresses that question by stating that because as long as you can have partially kasher zaman, but once you have two people, I formulated it poorly. So the way I formulated it would be an argument against even Rabbi Yosef's first case. It would be an argument why the Edom, even in that case, should pay both,
yes.
If I were correct. In some sense, I'm wrong in that regard, but I think what I'm saying makes a lot of sense. I'm wrong because it's clear from the Gemara I'm wrong, not I'm logically wrong, but obviously my logic has to be disregarded because the way it works, where's that din? Not here. He would appreciate this because he heard me say this last Shabbos. The way it works is that if you have a brilliant svara, and then the Gemara, the fact in the Gemara is that clearly doesn't assume your svara, it means your svara is wrong. So my brilliant svara is wrong, but it, I think, makes a lot of sense, which is that Rabbeinu Tam is a little bit of that. It's a slightly modified version of that, which is that whatever the Edom Zomim tried to do, that's their punishment. It's one punishment. So I'll stand by the logic of everything I said first, but it's clear that that's not Rabbi Yosef or Rava's position, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. But Rabbeinu Tam's position is one step away from that. When we get to Rabbeinu Tam, we'll talk about it. But conceptually speaking, Rabbeinu Tam's position could be readily anticipated even with the logic that I'm suggesting. Okay.
Basically what it was.
You are correct, and I am wrong. Ezra Shimon.
She might not own the ksuba.
What's that?
If she already sold the ksuba, then they're damaging the ksuba.
So that would be a different... I agree, and the Gemara would have probably adopted a different... might have very well adopted a different position there. But the normal case is a woman was not Mocheres, or Mishkana, or whatever ksubasa. But yes, you are correct. That would be the conceptual equivalent of the second case that Rav Yosef is about to state. Andy, go ahead. It's hard for you to get a word in here just because you're reading. Okay, so now what happened, just to make things confusing, you have Edom number one, who the Baal hires. They wanted to get the woman killed and make a forfeit aksuba. The Baal hired them, or at least so we think, because Edom number two came and said, you guys could not have said such a thing, because Imanu Hayusim, you were with us in Los Angeles at the time that you claimed to have seen this woman be Mizana. So maybe she was Mizana, maybe she wasn't Mizana, but you weren't there to see it, and therefore you are Edom Zomimim. And now Beis Din says, okay, you wanted to kill and find the woman, so we're going to kill you. And they only the Edim who testified that Nara Marasa was Insa, so they only get the death penalty. But now the husband turns around and he brings Edim who say to the Edim Hamazimin, to the Edim of the Av, hey, you couldn't have been with them in Los Angeles on that day because you were with us in Alaska on that day. So maybe they were or weren't in Los Angeles to see or not see the Nara Marasa Bimizana, but you could not have been there to know that they weren't there to see it happen. Okay? So therefore, now we're going to kill the Edei Ha'av, but the Gemara says that we kill them, the Edei Ha'av are Neheragin, and what is their din? Edei Ha'av. So what did the Edei Ha'av want to do? They wanted to make the Edim, the first set of Edim that they claimed were hired by the Baal, get the death penalty as Edim Zalman. They wanted to make the Baal have to either, I don't know why, I would have said just pay 100 kesef as a motzi shemra, and he also would have to pay his wife the ksuba, but maybe it's hainuach. He doesn't pay her a ksuba, why not? Because he can't divorce her. Okay, but he pays the 100 kesef. So they wanted to make the Baal pay money. They wanted to make the Edei Ha'av be put to death. And therefore, because they are now Edim Zelmamim, they are killed for wanting to put the Edei Ha'av to death. They have to pay whatever money the Baal would have had to have paid to the Baal. Okay? That why? Why don't we say, come and Ravine? The answer is, Mamon Lezeh, Unafashos Lezeh. Yes, Mr. Sprout.
If an Edei Zelmamim receives one punishment which may have more than one component for whatever Kasher Zamam, and when the Edei Ha'av, when the Edei Ha'av are
testifying against the woman, and they're Husam originally, you want to know, according to my logic, they should, even in the first case, they should have to pay money and be put to death, right?
You got ahead of myself.
Based upon my logic, that Kasher Zamam, whatever the Edim Zom wanted to do is one punishment. So that's why I'm wrong. That's what Schleim was pointing out. That my Svara was a little bit beyond Rabbeinu Tam's Svara. I think it's related to Rabbeinu Tam's Svara. Rabbeinu Tam is forced to constrain it, and he's forced to constrain it because of the first case of Rabbi Yosef. Yeah. Okay.
But even here, when the Edim Zomim come and they want to make sure that those first... those Edim Zomim come and they wanted to give
them
the first
Edim. Hold on. Edei Ha'av. And they say, Hanara Zinsa. Okay, what onshim were they going to give?
They were
going to get. Hefsei Ksuba. Manara. Now, why is the ksuba going to her?
They're married.
Because they had nisuin. Right? Because there's erisin, and kikach ishisha, and then uvai last there. They had nisuin. They had chuppah, they had birishon, and he said, hey, you're not a basula. That's nisuin. Hefsei ksuba. And misa, also for the nara. Okay, I'll stop bracketing the haze. Great episode. Okay, what happens next?
So now the Edei Ha'av come.
Edei Ha'av come, and they say
you were with us.
That Edei Ha'av imanu ha'isem. What do they want to do?
So they want.
They want to be hesed me'azuz for the Baal. And they want Misa for the Edei Ha'av.
Don't they also technically want them to pay Hefsei Ketubah? If it's one punishment and they were going to cause them to get it.
So I understand. You're asking why is Rabbi Yosef's first case? Why, when they're mazin them, if this is what they wanted to do, why don't they have to do both, because it's all kasher zamam? So I said that's why Rabbi Yitam is going to be forced to say that in order to have kasher zamam, it's enough to have part of the punishment for each particular party they wanted to harm. But if you don't have any of the punishment for the party, for one of the parties they want to harm, then that's not kasher zamam. So Rabbi Natan says that kasher zamam is the overriding principle of why you have to pay and be put to death in the cases of mamon lezeh nefashos lezeh. But he's saying that if you can fulfill kasher zamam without having to give multiple punishments, then you do so. And that's this case. It's a little dachuk. Rabbeinu Tam understood my svara, and he thought that my svara was correct enough, but it's against the Gemara. That's why he's forced to sort of say it's enough to get part of the punishment that's called kasher zamam.
And that also explains why the second pair don't get also 200 against the Eidim.
Now the second, 1 second. Now come the Eidim. There's no yud after the ayin, but I just wanted to be clear. I should have erased this. Okay. Eidim Hamazimin Eidei Ha'av. So what do they say? Eidei Ha'av Imanu Ha'isem. Okay. And now, what do they want to do? What is the outcome of their action? So, a few actions, the Gemara doesn't discuss all this. Number one, the Eid they would want, in principle, Eid Ha'av should be
killed.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm sorry, Misa. Let's see. Let's start Misa for Eid Ha'av. Who else?
The Nara. Isha is again going to have.
The Nara is going to get Misa now. Okay.
Technically, that's not their fault, really.
Well, it is. That's an interesting question. We're not doing Mako, so I don't know the answer. But the outcome of the Gemara does have a notion that you can say sometimes, you Eidim Zomimim can get themselves off the hook from part of the punishment if it's plausible, if they could say, oh, we only came to do X. Right? So they might say, we have no idea those consequences. Okay, but anyway, what about in the Mamon chart? So what do they want to do here? Firstly, theoretically, if in fact these Eidim will have to pay Me'azuz to the Baal, they want to have Mamon that the Eide Ha'av Mishalmin Me'azuz to the Baal. What else?
They should pay
the Isha, that the Nara Tafsid Ksubasa. They want the Nara to lose. So the Gemara, you're right, Yitzi, is leaving this out. Now, there are hashlachot that go beyond the immediate testimony. We can ignore that for the moment.
But shouldn't the second pair, the Eidei Ha'av, shouldn't they be responsible now for the hefzad they were going to cause in Mamon to the Eidim?
The Eidei Ha'av, now they are. Not to the Eidim?
Yeah, they were going
to. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. When they were Mazim Eider Baal, we weren't actually going to give this punishment. Right? In theory, the Eidus implied that. But we weren't actually going to give that punishment. We weren't going to give that punishment to the Eider Baal. So they're coming only to give the death penalty to the Nara. The Eider Baal are coming. Oh, sorry, I got that wrong. They want to be mafsid the Baal. 1 second. Hold on. You're going back to the original case?
No, second.
Wait, here?
Yeah.
They want to be mafsid the Baal me'azuz, and in fact, that's the Gemara's case. That's mamon lezeh nefashos lezeh.
I meant, with the exception, I guess, if the kumle carries over, they were also trying to make those Eidim lose the amount of the ktubah that they were going to have to pay.
They weren't. That's my point. In other words, their testimony, they knew their testimony, or they should have known their testimony, wasn't going to actually be mechayev those Eidim for that. Right? In other words, relationship, they don't equal, they don't connect. Okay. So, anyway, so now, one other just general point of knowledge, which I assume many of you know, but it would be inappropriate if you're not to state, that why is the case Imanu Hayisem? Again, many of you have probably learned Makos, but what's the point of why do I say that the testimony of subsequent sets of witnesses are Imanu Hayisem, you were with us?
Simply
And why is that Edom Zomim? What's the alternative? What would the alternative be? They would say, no, we saw it differently. It didn't happen. That's called Edei Hasha. The problem is that Edei Hasha don't work here, because what happens when you have Edom Hasha? What do you do? What? You throw all the witnesses out. So if the Edei Ha'av said to the Edei Baal, you're lying, the Nara was not Misana in a hotel room in New York because she was with us at the aquarium in Camden. So in that case, it's possible. We don't know. We don't know who to believe. So what do? Throw them out of court, say, have a nice life. We can't listen to you. So in that case, there's no punishment for anybody. Zach?
Well, I mean, if you use that spell, could you say, you know, we also don't know who to believe the witnesses saying you want to raise
them? So you have to understand something. The way it works is that, and this actually is related to, I only spoke to a few of you, I think it was to Alex and John about this, maybe a couple of others, about the whole Ravid Shita here in Sanhedrin about Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, but I would say the following. You're a Karov Eitzel, you have Krovim for whom you're apostle to testify. But regarding yourself, it's not that you're apostle to testify about yourself, it's not even testimony. And that means the following. Whenever two witnesses come and say, we saw X happen, that does not... there is two parts of the testimony. One of which they are believed, and one of which we accept, even though they're not believed, then it's not Eidus. The part in which they're believed is that Reuven killed Shimon. The part on which we accept, even though we don't believe it because it's not Eidus, is what? Is that we were there to see it. In other words, if two witnesses say we saw Reuven kill Shimon, you know, on the corner of 29th Street and whatever, and in Lexington in New York City, we believe them. They saw Reuven kill Shimon. We don't really believe them. We believe that their testimony, Reuven kill Shimon, but we can't accept their testimony actually there. We don't not accept it. We don't deny it, but we don't accept that as a function of Eidus. Thus, it's basically a neutral statement that has not, to which has not been it has not been attested to in court. When two other Eidim come and say, look, if two Eidim come and say Reuven didn't kill Shimon at that particular time at that location, so they're arguing about what a set about a particular Eidus, right? And we don't know who to believe, we throw it out. But if they're testifying, we're not even arguing about your Eidus, but we're arguing about the meta Eidus, you know, which is not actually Eidus, which is namely that you were on the corner, you were in position to see the corner of 29th Street in Lexington at that particular time, which is impossible because you were with us on the Gluck base of Medrash at that time. So that's not Eidus HaMacheshes Eset. There's no conflict in the Eidus there because I can testify about you, but I can't testify about myself. And that's, I believe, why it's not Edei Hazama, which obviously is a conflict as to where the two witnesses were at the time, is not a matter of Hachasha because it's not really Eidus when it's about yourself. The ramifications here, by the way, in our Gemara, according to the Ravid, the Gemara says that Ploni Ravani, right, we say Palginan Dibura, right, we believe that Ploni was a Raveya somebody, but not that it was me. Why? Because Adam Karvetz al Atzmo. The Ravid says that's only true Lagabe Atzmo. The Ravid said, had you said Ploni Rava Achi, we could not say Palgina Dibura, because Eidu Shabatla Miktsasa Batla Kula. And you're a Karvetz al Ach. But why not? Why not say Adam Karvetz al Achiv? The answer is, when we say Karov here, we don't mean Karov in the classic sense. We mean that Adam Kar is so Karov Etzel Atzmo that it's not even Eidus. It's not that it's Eidus Psula. It's not even Eidus. And therefore, it's like any comments about myself and my own testimony are as if they are not there. And that's the Gemara's Chiddush of Rabbah, that by Ishto also, because of Ishto Kegufo, it's not that an Adam is Karav Eitzel, it's not that when she's one of the Krovim is possible to testify, it's not even Eidus. Okay? So that's, I believe, the exact same thing that's going on, Legabe Hazama. That we if we don't believe a person that they were there to have seen the testimony, you could never have Eidus. So Memela, we sort of gloss over the fact that part of their testimony is that they were there to see it. We just accept they saw it. But as soon as two Eidim come and now testify that they were not on the corner of 29th and Lex, that's real Eidus, which is uncontradicted by any Eidus, and therefore we believe it.
So when you do Brisha and Chakira with these two first witnesses, just like, let's say, there's a Reuven murdered Shimon.
Right.
And then you find out that they're machish each other about where exactly they are. So why don't we just ignore that?
No, so the answer is, if you know they're lying, that they weren't there, and of course, even without, as a matter of fact, you just happen to know, of course you don't accept their testimony. Right? Just as if they testified that they were in a place that doesn't exist and watched
they
it.
They couldn't be the ones testifying.
If they got up and said, we were standing on top of the building, you know, the seven-story building right next to, you know, the literally right on the corner of Lexington and 29th, and then you investigate and you see that there's no building there, it's an empty parking lot, okay?
No, saying, what
do we believe their testimony? No.
They contradict each other in their testimony about where they are, so then all you have is testimony about the one aide, meaning the only reason you would know that they weren't there is because of their own testimony during the
Well, then, if Adam Achishim says on their location on basic details, we throw them out. Again, it's not...
No one's testified about their location.
Okay, no, but as a prerequisite for Adam, you have to, again, the prerequisite for Adam is that you were there. It's not formal Adam in the sense of, you know, that it's like regular Adam subject to the standard rules, but you have to establish that they were there. Now, we believe them not as Eidos, just because we have, because otherwise there wouldn't be Eidos. But we at least, but as soon as we have reason to suspect that it's false, not that it's false Eidos, but that it's false, we have to toss it. That's all. Sprung.
What does that lead to the conclusion that if Adim sees someone about to kill and they give him Hatra, that what they're technically testifying about is that he had a conversation with thin air about accepting the consequences of his action? Because they can't be saying it about themselves, or maybe there's an aid echad.
They are fundamentally testifying that he was warned.
Testifying that they warned.
Yeah, they're saying.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to warn him.
But they're.
Okay, so and therefore what?
So technically, they've come in. They've testified that he's had a conversation with no one. Or with thin air, or I mean that it just turns the testimony to something.
No, and say again, that's an interesting question of what you do with the Hasra. That's actually very complicated. I don't want to go into it for the moment, but I would just say for the simple case, where a regular case of testimony, no other Adim coming, again, we believe them. I would say that that's easy to say anyway, that we believe that the person was warned. That's not even a chiddush, because you don't need the witnesses to warn him. You need somebody to warn him in the presence of witnesses.
But they're the only ones there.
They don't have to be the only ones there. Isha, a katan, anybody could warn the guy.
Okay, but...
That kasha doesn't bother me. That kasha doesn't bother me. Is there Shema?
Could they be testifying about each other, that the other one warned him?
Yes, except for there'd only be one witness, and his testimony would be meaningless. But you're correct.
But does there only have to be one person doing this job?
I don't remember. I think it's sufficient. I mean, I think the Eidim have to hear the Hasra, but only one person. You don't even need one of the Eidim to give the Hasra. Okay.
But then how can they testify about themselves that they gave him Hasra?
They don't have to do that. They just need to testify that Hasra was given. The details, as long as they're not contradicting each other on a basic point, it's fine. We don't care who gave it. We just don't. It happens to be true. We don't care who gave the Hasra.
But they are fundamentally testifying about themselves being the ones in that conversation.
So, again, just in other words, that's an unimportant detail. That's no different than Ploni Ravani Laonsi. It's an unimportant, and I don't care the E at the end. So that's the easiest thing to deal with. Adir?
So if Adim, I guess, in general are being hired out making a claim, instead of, I guess, in this case, with Adi Baal, wouldn't it make more sense from their perspective to make up a claim that's Hafasha as opposed to Hazama? Because then you're meaning.
Well, we're going to assume, you mean, the Eidei, who are you talking about here? You say, your Eidim are always better off. If their interest is in protecting themselves and not telling, but not more in telling the truth, you're better off being machish other Eidim than being mazin them. Because if you're mazin them, you could be subject to hazama. Whereas if you're machish them, while you could be subject to hazama, you won't get any punishment because you don't want to get anybody punished. But the assumption is that Eidim actually come in to tell the truth. Right? So we're not going to say, well, you could argue, why not give them nemonos, an amigo that they could have been machish them instead. Instead, they were mazin them. Besides, maybe they really didn't hate their guts. So, you know, it's not amigo because maybe they wanted to get them killed. They wanted to take the risk. So, again, that's kind of neither here nor there. Okay. So now the Gemara continues. The big print. The Amarava. Okay, so Ploni Bal Naramarasa Vahuzmu Neragin Vemishama Mamon. Why are they, what do they wish to accomplish in their testimony? What was their testimony? Some of you were very bothered by this. It seems bothersome at first, but it's actually not so bothersome. What is the testimony here?
That
Alex?
That a man had BO with an anonymous betrothed girl.
Okay. That a man, specifically, in front of you, thou, okay, had bia with a Nara Marasa, whose identity remains unknown to us. How do they know it was a Nara Marasa? Because they watched the wedding ceremony. They watched the Hassan give the Kala a ring, Sarah Mekudeshesli in front of Edom. The people, the witnesses shouted, Mazel Tov, or Mekudeshes. And then the woman, went across the street. The husband left in his car, the woman across the street, and had an affair with somebody. So, and then she leaves, and she gets in her car and goes away. They didn't get the license plate numbers. So now all they're left with is this guy who just had bia with an Eish HaSish. So they bring him to Beis Din and say, Ploni Bal Nara Marasa.
Does
Nivi
Murasa?
What?
Does Nivi Murasa?
Yes. If she weren't married, then...
Can it be also...
An Eish HaSish Mamish in Nisuan? Yeah, okay. That just happens to be the case. It's relevant for the continuation of the Gemara. So they say Nara Marasa, but they don't say who, because they don't know who, but they know it was a Nara Marasa. If they're not sure that she was Marasa, then you can't kill the guy, obviously, because you don't know he committed a capital offense. That's pretty straightforward. So now, a Neragim, why ain't Mishalman and Mama? Yes.
How do they know she's Nara? Is it said in the wedding?
Because they watch the father of the bride tearfully say, I have raised you for 12 years, 3 months, and 1 day. I have watched you turn into a young woman. And he gave a speech under the chuppah, and the Edom were crying, and everybody was crying, And, by the way, how do you know she was a psula? How do you ever know? There's a chazaka. That's a chazaka, right? Okay, so there you go. And in fact, it could be that she wasn't even Nara yet. She could have been Tana. He's still Chai Misa. Right, as long as the father was there, she could have been 4 years old. She wouldn't be subject to penalty anyway. Okay, but that's not the case here. The case is they knew she was a Nara, and they saw the Averson. And right, it's not a shaila by Rabbi Yosef's case of Ploni or Vani or Tzoni, because if you see two males engaged in a sexual act, you know that that's a violation of Mishka Zachar. There's no question whether they're personal, married, single, and so on and so forth. But here, obviously, you have to be able to know that she was in a Nara Marasa. Yes, but you can come up with a scenario. Fine. So why don't they have to pay money? Klatskasha. Why should they have to pay money? Whom are they going to cost money? Well, you'll say that what are the ramifications of that action when the Nara Marasa was Mizana? She lost her ksuba. There's only one little catch. We don't know who she is. Somewhere in the world, there's a man and a woman where the man doesn't know that his wife committed adultery and he will pay her ksuba. It's probably Maisim B'chol Yom, actually. It's a reality of the world. But maybe not B'chol Yom, but well, it depends. If you're talking about from people, not B'chol Yom, just every other day. But it happens. It happens. There are probably many cases like that, right? The husband just doesn't know, right? They say there's a certain frightening percentage, actually, of people whose presumed fathers are actually not their fathers based upon genetic testing. That is a frightening, frightening notion. I'd like to believe in our community it exists but virtually non-existent, but the statistics, generally speaking, done in a broad study, were frightening. I don't know if it reached double digits, but if it didn't, it was awfully close in percentage, and that is a frightening statistic. There is a reason why Chazal have to point out the chazaka of Rov Bilos Achar Habal. It's Rov Bilos Achar Habal, not Kol Bilos Achar Habal. Fine. So now, they don't have to pay money because you can't say to them, you wanted to cost her money, because they obviously didn't want to cost her money in their testimony because they didn't even know who the her was. And therefore, the only Chayiv Misa, because they weren't going to cost anybody any money, and therefore, obviously, they weren't trying to cost anybody any money. Daniel.
Why are we reading this Gemara as if her identity is totally unknown?
Because of... Alex, your question, apropos, I wanted to read the next line. Go ahead, Andy. Okay, so, Alex wanted to know, after I explained to him what Bito Shaploni was, that it's the same case, but now they identify the woman as well. How did I know to read the Gemara that way? The answer is because Bito Shaploni is not a sentence. It's a half sentence, which requires an earlier clause distributed onto it as well. As Ibn Ezra would say, it needs something that's a Moshech Acher Vehu Imo. Moshech Hu V'Acher Imo. And therefore... Hinei mital hashmana hashamayim u mishmanei haaretz. Ibn Ezra says, the mem on Mital, I remember, I once not say who, someone who's in Chinuch now, was, when I was a student in Yeshiva, was arguing to me that the word Mishmaneh, it should be a Shvana, because the mem in front of it is really Mishmaneh, from the fat things. Of course, what he didn't realize, he's wrong one, but even if he weren't wrong, he's wrong anyway, because the word is Mishmanim. And Ibn Ezra says, Mital HaShamayim, and that mem of Mital is Moshe Chuva Acharimo, it's Umi Mishmaneh HaAretz. So it's distributive. So what is distributive, coming back to our case, it's distributive here. Namely, the Gemara started by saying the following. Ploni ba al naraha marasa bito shel ploni. Who is bito shel ploni? You can leave it down marasa. Vihusmu. The first sentence was ploni ba, let's say it like this. Ploni ba al nar marasa vihusmu neragin. Ploni ba al bito shel ploni vihusmu neragin. So Alex, for the very same reason that I knew that in order to understand what the second half means, I had to look to the verbs at the beginning that were being distributed, the answer to you, Daniel, is once I know the verbs are being distributed, I have two cases. One is ploni ba narasa, one is ploni ba bito shel ploni, and obviously once you logically put it together, you realize the first case is precisely because it is anonymous. You can tell from the continuation the next case of the Gemara as well. Right. If you didn't figure it out reading the first clause, you felt reading the second. But yes. This is why, by the way, often you can't understand the text properly until you read the whole text. There is value. You know, there's a Gemara in Shabbos where important Gemara from an educational, what? For the Daf Yomi person. What Gemara am I thinking of? Chaim's going to want to just leave before the end of the year now. You start Yavamos?
I started Yavamos, yeah.
All right, good. He's a young man with an impressionable memory. People like me are old. You know, Al Chazar going one ear at the other. So the Gemara says the following, Adaf Samach Gimel Amid Aleph. I don't know this Gemara because of Daf Yomi Chaim. I know this Gemara because I happen to know this Gemara already. If we're just Daf Yomi, I would have forgotten it too. So don't understand. I'm teasing Chaim, but the truth is, I'm doing Daf Yomi, and I've forgotten many of the Gemaras also. And the Gemaras I know better are the Gemaras that I already knew before doing Daf Yomi.
Last year also.
Okay, yes, but we didn't do this Gemara. So that and that, you're Potter. So the Gemara says as follows. Amar of Kahana, Karavina bar it's a Daf Samach Gimel Amar Aleph. Amar of Kahana, Karavina bar Tmanei Sari Shinim. When I was 18 years old, Vahava Gamirna Le Lechulei Hashas. I had learned all of Shas. Veloha Veyadana De Emikwe Yotzi Medei Pshuta Ar Hashta. I didn't know until now Emikwe Yotzi Medei Pshuta, which is not that he heard, not just he hadn't heard the statement, he didn't understand the principle. So the Gemara says, Maika Mashmalan, the Ligmar Inish Vahada Lizbar. First, learn the text, Ligmar, to have Gemaras, have all the traditions in line, and then later you figure out the Svaras behind them. So I'm not suggesting that your next course should just spend the next 10 days just reading through all the Shas without understanding it, but there is a value in reading when you're learning a Sugya, you're learning a line, you're learning a section, to running through it to see it all before you go back and make sure you understood everything, because seeing what comes later may often shed light on what came earlier, and it may be hard to understand it without it. Okay, so that's how I knew. So now the Gemara says, "V'amar." So why do you pay bito shel ploni m'huzmu neragin? So who do they want to cost what? They wanted to cost bito shel ploni. They said that's ploni baal bito shel ploni, and they got hazama. They're neragin, and they pay money. Why? Mamal lezeh nefashel zeh. So what are the hashlachot or the totsaot of their testimony that ploni baal al bas ploni naramarasa? Yitzi?
Well, she should also be killed aside from cloning.
Could you not ask questions? Could you answer the question?
The hashlachot are that Pony is killed.
Yes.
And Bat Pony is both killed and loses her Aktuba.
So you're already asking, you're correct, you're wrong, but, well, according to Tosis, you seem to be right, but it's a problem. But you're already asking the question before you finished answering my question. What Yitzi's pointing out is that the ramification should be, you know, you want to say Misa to that guy because he is committing adultery, and then you want to say Misa to the... Gemara wants to say mamon to the girl. That's the way you're reading, to lose his aksuba. So Yitzi's asking Akasha, what do you mean the girl loses mamon? She also loses her life. She committed adultery. So how is it mamon? It's granted it's nefashos to the guy, but to the girl also it's nefashos. So what do you mean? Lagabe the girl, it's nefashos and mamon lechad. So you should just give her the death penalty. So Rashi was nizhar from this, and I gave you the Rashi, even if you didn't look up the Gemara itself. What did Rashi say to get around the kasha? And I anticipated this a few moments ago when I pointed out that the Nara, the Motzi Shemra, is dealing by what case, what kind of a woman? What is her status when this case unfolds? Arusa or Nesua? Nesua. And by Nesua, to whom does the Ksuba go?
Her.
Oh, but in this case, she's a Nara Hamarasa. This is not the Baal Bimotzi Shemra. Someone says, I saw this Nara Hamarasa Bimazana. So who loses the Ksuba? Her father. That's why the father is not Chayim Nisa at all. He didn't do anything wrong. But nonetheless, it's Mamon Lezeh, Nefashos Lezeh, Nefashos Lezeh, Mamon Lezeh, and it's on that basis. That's how Rashi is Nizer. There is a problem with this. What?
That addresses Nagar's question, basically. He wants to know why couldn't it be an Asuba, that's why.
Okay? Yeah. Fine. Now, there is the only problem with this Rashi's, I think, makes a lot of sense. The problem is Tosos, in the beginning of our Tosos, seems to have forgotten this point. He glosses over this notion because Tosos describes it. If you look at our Tosos for one moment, Tosos says, in Tosos, on the second line, Mishalman Mamun Lazan Nefashos Lazeh, Perish Mamun Labasha Ratzu Lahasa Laksuba, Unefashos Lazeh Sha'omer Shabal Leha. What are you talking about? It's also Nefashos La. And so I thought I was so clever, without thinking it through carefully, I said, it's a case where he was Ma'anesar. Ha ha. So if that's the case, why is that wrong? I explain why she's not getting Misa. Excellent! What's that? No, he would. If he raped her, he would get Misa. A man rapes an Ishizis, she's Ptura, he's Chayiv. There's no knas. That's not a hefset. That he, by testifying, he's not being mafsed her a knas. Without his testimony, we don't even know a rape took place. That's a klutz, teretz, kasha, something. No! If she was raped, she doesn't forfeit her ksuba. And Aishas Kohen Shenensa may have to get divorced because she's halachically a zona, but the Kohen husband has to pay her ksuba. She didn't do anything wrong.
Then they're crossing the husband.
What's that?
Oh, not the husband. They're the ma'anes.
They're not doing anything. They're not until they came, the husband had to pay her ksuba anyway. So technically, you could have argued such a thing, but Tosis didn't say that. Certainly, she's not being mafsed this her ksuba. So I could come up with a teretz, though. It did occur to me a teretz. I don't know. The Nosei Kalim, I didn't see anything in the back on this Tosis. Again, what's that? There is a note on the side. Oh, so the Demarsha did see it. How did I miss it? I was looking for something else, a different part of Tosis, the end of Tosis, and I didn't see anything, but I guess I wasn't looking carefully. There weren't too many Marshas. So I'll give you a different turret. I give it to you only as a way of highlighting for you a very, very important din. A very important din, which can't be the turrets here because it's impossible. Yeah, because it's a Nara Hamarasa. What if she had been a Katana? I'll tell you anyway. It won't work in this case. What if she had been a Katana? What would the din be? She wouldn't get the death penalty. So one of you is going to turn around and say, then I haven't solved the problem. Why not? Because if she's a Katana, and everybody knows that Pitu Katana is Ones, right? By definition, that's why she doesn't get the death penalty. She's not acting with Ratzim. So then what should the din of her ksuba be? She should get her ksuba. Let's put aside that. That's not important right now. So why might that not be the case? Here, now, I don't know for sure, but here's a very important question. Supposing a katana is mizana, is she muteres labaila? Is she muteres labaila? So what would you say? The pastress is a Gemara Yevamos that says it beferish, I think. Pitur katana onas. It's a master, she's muteres labaila. So the Rambam paskins, if a katana is mizana, she's asur labaila. That's what's going on. So there's a lot of interesting lumdus in this. Rav Kiv Eiger has some very interesting comments that I won't talk about on Ksubas Daf Tes to explain why he thinks that sugya is cholik on the Gemara Yevamos, that pituk tan is not onus. But that's not the well-known daya. The well-known shita is the tshuva the marik. The marik deals with the following question. Supposing a woman is mizana, a gedola is mizana because she thought it was mutter. She thought it was mutter to do. She thought it was mutter. She didn't know that there was an isser. You know, the rabbi gave a sermon, spoke about adultery. She thought it was a midas chasidus. Okay? So what's the din? You have a famous, famous, famous tshuva from the period of the Achronim. I think it was in the time of the Nod Yehuda, about some charlatan who was going around. He was staying in places, and he came to this woman. I guess her husband was away, and said, "You know," he spoke to her privately and said, "I have a secret to tell you. I'm Eliyahu Hanavi, and you're going to sleep with me tonight, and we're going to give birth to the Mashiach." And the poor, ignorant woman listened to him. And now the shaila was she Asura Levayma? They didn't give birth to the Mashiach, by the way, just in case you were wondering. Okay, at least not as best as we know. I think it may be in the Nod Yehuda. I don't know. I've
seen the tshuva and didn't see a tshuva. I saw
this recently.
What's that? I'm sure this has happened repeatedly of one variety or another, where someone persuades someone that it's a mitzvah. Unfortunately, we seem to have, not in this particular scandal, other scandals where, you know, in gear, unfortunately. I'm not even sure that they're telling it's a mitzvah. You know, but it wouldn't surprise me. You get charismatic figures, and they do all sorts of crazy. Get people do all sorts of crazy things. So the Marik writes that an isha who is mizana, thinking that it was muteres, is a sur labayla, even though she brings a chatas and she's patura mimisa because she's a shogeges. It's a classic shogeg, but lagabe baila, she's a sur labayla. Why? Because umaala vomaal. Even though she didn't know that it was an isser kares and an isser misa, and it was this type and that type of isser, nonetheless she knew that she was betraying her husband. That she understood. Any person with half seichel understood that. So that's what the Marik, I believe, uses this Rambam as a proof. That even though the Ketana doesn't have das from the perspective of she's a Baratzon, that she's Chayeves Misa, and I don't know if he talks about Ksuba or not, but I would think it's possible if he has to divorce her because of something she did, and imagine he's Pata from giving the Ksuba. And he says, and that's why she has Surah. He wants to explain she to the Rambam, because even though Pituk Tana Ones, that's Lagabe, she'd bring a, if she were a Gdola, she'd bring a Chatas. In other words, but from the vantage point of the husband, it's a Malo Voma. I believe that's this Ma'arik is the Ramah quotes, it might be one of the last Simanim in Avana Ezer, last Simanim in, Choshem Mishpah, I think was the last Chelek. The Ramah, I think it's Simon Kof Ayin Ches, quotes the two Deos in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber Ramah, I don't know who quotes one or both of them, whether or not we hold like this Ma'arik or not. And that's Omeris Mutar. If a woman thinks that it's mutter, is that called shogeg anat lagabe baila? So anyway, if this had not been a nara marasa, had it been a ketana hama urasa, whose father was kibla bakidushin, so then case would work. Why? Because mitzad misa, she's petura. But mitzad mamon, if the marik is correct, she'd lose her ksuba. And therefore, it would have been mamon al-zanefashas lezeb. But if you don't say that, you may be forced to amend, as the Marasha did, that it's mamon not to the isha, but mamon to her father, because the isha is going to get killed as well. Both are getting killed. And therefore, you can't say mamon l'zedefashas l'zed, because by the isha, if it was her ksuba, the fact that she's losing a ksuba would mean that she's also getting a death penalty, in which case you wouldn't say mamon l'zedefashas l'zed. Daniel?
Isn't that tell the age of the katana? She's 5 years old. She doesn't have any
da'as. Inachanami. But you could have a girl who's 11 years old, who's what we call like a mufla samach, we'll call it mufla samach l'isha, who understands enough. Again, you can agree or disagree with the Marik. And even if you agree with the Marik, you could say that his proof is not a good proof. But I believe that the Marik cites this. That, by the way, does not explain how the Rambam read the Gemara in Yavamas. That you still need an alternative explanation to figure out where did the Rambam see a sugya which argued on the Gemara in Yavamas. Yes, you see.
In other words, she's losing out on her tuba midrabanan. Oh no, it's not derabanan. It's a regular tuba because she's been married by her father.
Yeah, correct. And it wouldn't matter even if the ksuba and the rabanan, the hefsed is daraisa. Right. In other words, it doesn't really matter whether the chiyuv to pay the ksuba is the rabbanan or not. The bottom line is, once you're obligated to do so, it's an obligation like any other obligation. And if you're mashed, that person makes no difference.
Also, you should have answered that she was a rationalist and she felt that it was a vision and that it wasn't Mala Boma.
I'm going to not touch that one. Okay. I think you're about 15 feet away from me, so you get the idea. Okay. Fine. Okay. Now, I should have actually made small fonts subsequently also. Let's take a quick look at the Gemara Baba Kama. Andy, thank you for reading. You can finish up. You might as well, since we're just about done. Yesh Chayev. Ketzad. So sometimes for the same act, you're chayev and you're sure, if you're sure that it would be pater, sometimes you're pater and the shor is chayev. Now the former statement makes a lot of sense. The latter statement seems bizarre. Anything that your shor does in this chayev on, certainly you should be chayev on. And in principle, in fact, it's true. Except for that of kam levi d'rabba minei. The reverse makes sense. There are things that if you behave that way, you're chayev, but your shor is not a bardas, so you don't really, it doesn't really count. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, shoro. If a shor embarrasses somebody, then you don't have to pay for the boshes. A shor can't really, boshes required, to be chayv and boshes, it requires kavan. In fact, it's not just boshes. A shor doesn't pay any of the chamisha dvarim except for nezek. It's the only thing you pay. But a shor does not have kavanah to be mevayish. Most oxen are not that clever, at least not outside of the cartoons. So, go ahead. V'husha b'yesh chayv. Shoro. Right, if it puts out the eye or other rashi varm of your slave, you don't have to free the slave. But for husha sima, okay. Now in the reverse, shoro. It means if it doesn't mean if the ox gores its father or mother. It means if the ox gores your father or mother. Okay, v'hu shechava ba'avivimo because of kam maybe the rabba mina yuchai misa. Shoro. Okay. So, the question immediately, of course, you're going to ask here is this a case of Mamon Lazar Nefashos Lazar or not? And the answer to that question on some level for all of the Rishonim has to be what? No. Why? Because otherwise, there really couldn't be a sheet in the Amoraim that Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer is Chayiv. If this, now, how would this be Mamon Lazer? Who are you Chayiv Misa to here? Take the Shabbos case. To whom are you Chayiv Misa? What? God. Who are you Chayiv Mamon to? The owner of the Godish. If this were to be called Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer, then there could be, and your Pater, no sheet in the Gemara could say it would be a Tshufta. Against what looks like Rava's position, and maybe Rabbi Yosef holds it partially. So, for some reason, and as we go through, we'll stop with this, as we continue in Tosfos, and when we go through Tosfos and the other Rishonim, whatever we look at, so you have to consider, how does this case fed into your theory about Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer? Right? Just as I'll close by noting, how does this all get started here? Because the Gemara's case about Ravashi, which we haven't read yet, Bezor She'achal Truma V'karash Shalo V'karash Yiran She'achavera. He's Chayiv Misa for eating his own Truma. He's a Zar who acquired Truma. He bought it from a Kohen, inherited from a Kohen. And yet, he's damaging somebody else's silk pajamas. So in such a case, it looks like it's Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer, Rashi says. And yet, you say, Kam Le'i Rabine. So he says that Ravashi argues on Rava in Sanhedrin, who says, Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer, you pay both. So that's what's going to launch the entire discussion. So, our Gemara, you can say what you want. It's Ravashi talking. And the Gemara Sanhedrin is also the Amoraim talking. But you have a Mishnah in Bava Kama that says that Hidlik is a Gadish Chavero, B'Shabbos is Pato, because a Mishchai Ben Asho would suggest, if that's a case of Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer, and the Mishnah says you're Pater, it means there's nothing to discuss about Mamon Lazer Nefashos Lazer. Obviously, you're not Chayiv. Nobody could tell that way. Rava would be wrong. Black and white, because it's against the Mishnah. So that's what you have to figure out. Why is this considered Mamon and Nefashos Lachat? Okay. We will stop.